never the beautiful cities far off in the land of the blessed, but in the only cities I've ever known, the weary get no rest.
From Colorado, I guess, and today Ames, Iowa, and Des Moines, Iowa. Welcome to the Dim Danahy Show here at danahy.com, a proud member of the Coffee Party USA Network. And today we're going to have a really special guest, a man whom I met a year ago at the Great March for Climate Action, and just a remarkable man, a real community volunteer. He knows about climate and environmental issues, and I think you're really going to like this guy. He's also a radio show host in Iowa in a number of cities, and certainly the man deserves your time and attention. I think you're going to like what he has to say. But as we always do, and I like to cover some unusual stories in the news, things that don't really get covered by big media but could potentially have a huge impact on your life. The first story is kind of interesting just because of the people involved with this, but Senator Elizabeth Warren and John McCain and Bernie Sanders and Angus King from Maine and Maria Cantwell, they've introduced legislation to substantially reinstate Glass-Steagall. It's Senate Bill 1709. And Glass-Steagall was something that was enacted around 1934, and it prevented banks from using your money for speculative things that banks do. Invest in derivatives or just use it for anything but lending. And it really had a big impact in 2008 for the Great Recession. But anyway, Clinton repealed it in 1999, and the banks are substantially more risky now. But with this new bill trying to reinstate it, and it would be phased in over 6 years, there's hope. However, unless your name is McConnell or something like that, these six wonderful senators, it may not get far. But I'm glad that they are trying to push to see if they could reinstate Glass-Steagall and make banks again. And if banks want to take investment risk and make money using their own money, fine. But if Senators Warren, McCain, Sanders, King, and Maria Cantwell have their way, they won't be able to do all their risky things with our money. And I should make mention, too, that there is a House version that is being introduced by Marcy Kaptur of Ohio, and 63 other members have signed on, too. So there is at least awareness in Congress about trying to bring back some of the Glass-Steagall protections, and let's hope that we can make some progress there. The House of Representatives, the Agricultural Committee, it took them only 17 minutes to pass what many critics are calling the mother of all Monsanto protection acts. It turns food labeling, if you can believe this, it takes food labeling, including GMOs, genetically modified organisms, it takes food labeling and makes it voluntary as if you want to reveal this information. meaning companies who use GMOs, companies that import beef from overseas, companies that do whatever they want to do, they can go ahead and label what's in their food on a voluntary basis, but you know they're not. They've spent tens or hundreds of millions of dollars fighting food labeling laws everywhere. And for the House Agriculture Committee to pass this bill, allowing, thinking that voluntary will work, I think they're sadly mistaken. Atlantic Magazine wrote in their current issue a pretty extensive article about the amount of food fraud that is going on now, meaning that like the Chinese putting melamine in baby food or dog food, about olive oil not being really a virgin olive oil. It's being diluted with soybean oil and some other things like that. So food purity and food fraud, deliberate food fraud, is increasing. And the United States' response to that is to continue to cut budgets at the FDA and the USDA. And meanwhile, the food people are taking advantage of it. So it's a terrible situation. I do not understand how they can continue with this, but our House of Representatives, in their infinite wisdom, the Agricultural Committee, took 17 minutes. But I should mention it has a Democratic co-sponsor, too. And I think it's Debbie Stabenow or someone like that, somebody from Minnesota or thereabouts. But it's just nuts if they think it's going to actually improve things. It'll just be a loophole that protects Monsanto and others. I should also mention that this bill barely mentions glyphosate, and that's the toxic chemical Roundup, I believe, that's found in 80% of all GMOs. It really is a very disturbing story. The Economic Policy Institute reports that if lifting the minimum wage to $12 an hour would help 35 million American workers. That's about one in four, maybe a little bit more than one in four American workers would be helped if they raise the minimum wage to $12 an hour. And the reason they would be helped is obviously the low-income workers would get a boost from the current approximately $7.80, I think, what the minimum wage is right now. They would get a boost, but also the people that are making slightly more than minimum wage now, in order to, how can we say, to keep the pay scales relative, people making more than minimum wage now would have to get a raise too in order to maintain the privilege of rank. For example, if somebody's making $7.83 an hour now and their boss is making 10, the minimum wage person goes up to 12, that boss will probably need to be making 13 or 14. So raising the minimum wage helps a lot of people, and that's a heartening thing to see. And Economic Policy Institute continues to write excellent stories and stay on top of this. Here's another story that's interesting and sad, truthfully. But CommonDreams.com reports that 2015 is expected to be the hottest year for planet Earth ever. It's a frightening statistic. The global temperature is now 2.27 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. And the previous average the previous record was 0.11 degree, one-tenth of a degree, essentially, Fahrenheit over the 20th century average. And that record was set in 2012. I know I'm doing numbers, and you guys hate it when I do numbers on the radio, but 2.25 degrees Fahrenheit, more than the 20th century average, and the difference is 20 times, really, the tenth of a degree record set in 2012. This global climate change, I hope you realize that this is really needs quick discussion and quick action. You'll hear more from Ed Fallon later in the show, but I hope you realize how serious this problem is becoming. Here's a story that I know everybody kind of had a odd reaction to. I think everybody did. The drug kingpin El Chapo in Mexico. He's a guy that escaped from the Mexican jail in that mile long tunnel, and the mile long tunnel had like little railroad tracks in it and a little specially modified little motorcycle in there to scoot him out there. Just unbelievable. And John Oliver, I think, did a great routine on it because the guy loves tunnels. He has tunnels from his houses. He tunneled under the U.S. border. I mean, the guy has engineers. He tunnels everywhere. It's amazing. But there's speculation now. How could a guy like that escape? And because 2 weeks before he escaped, the United States asked the Mexican government to extradite El Chapo to the United States for some charges and to be held in U.S. jails. But the Mexican government kind of didn't comply or didn't respond. And so the United States Department of Justice is a little bit upset with this. But there's some people within that used to be in the Mexican group fighting drugs in Mexico, and they're thinking that perhaps the Mexican government allowed El Chapo to escape. Apparently things are so crazy right now. It's like law of the jungle in Mexico. It's a situation where gangs are unruly. You know, they're killing government, federal narcotics officers. They're killing Mexican army people. Gangs are killing gangs. It's just apparently the rule of law in Mexico is just absolutely falling apart. And so there's speculation that the Mexican government allowed El Chapo to escape because apparently he's like an old school drug kingpin. And as horrible as that is, apparently he runs a tight ship. You know, he keeps things under control. It keeps all the cartels in balance, and you know, he's not. He puts a set of laws into place, and so, you know, it's crazy to think that the in Mexico it's gotten so bad over the last 20 years that they have to let a drug kingpin out of jail in order to stabilize the drug cartels and try and bring some sense of orderly disorder to the government and the people of Mexico. How bad must it be to get to a situation such as that? Another story I think is interesting, and this is something that we've touched upon in a couple different ways on the show. Richard Wolff has come on the show and talked about, you know, how employees need to share productivity gains, meaning that, as an example, since 1980, the U.S. economy's growth due to productivity, all the returns have gone to the top 1%, and average people and low-income people, the 99%, has been stuck with nothing, no effective increase since around 1980. And so Richard Wolff has speculated that somehow we have to find a way that all people can participate in the productivity growth. And productivity growth, for lack of a better term, is profit. And I'm saying that word just for a reason. The profit, the productivity growth, needs to get to all people, or else people who are unemployed, people who don't have jobs, people who are underemployed. What happens is that there's no social welfare net, social safety net to help them. They're sitting there without help, without jobs. They don't know what to do. And it's just a horrible situation. And Richard Wolff has said, well, if they own part of a company where they work or where they used to work, well, then whatever the company made would help pay for people. And so with technology, computers and robots and other kinds of technology coming in, fewer and fewer people are expected to work in the future. And Atlantic Monthly's current cover story is about robots and the future of work. And you can pick it up at a newsstand, but it's called Technology Will Soon Erase Millions of Jobs. Could that be a good thing? Well, yes and no. You know, they say that in the next 20 years, this article goes on to say, or quote Oxford researchers, that says that machines might be able to take half of all U.S. jobs within 2 decades, 20 years. So you take a look at that, and you're sitting here going, well, we got to, all these people have to have jobs, you know, or else they starve, especially if we keep cutting back the social programs. Well, yeah, they would. And that's the reason we have to start taking a look at how these companies are structured. You know, their labor has to be involved with the decision-making process. If labor says, hey, yeah, we can automate or industrialize or computerize or whatever, and it would make sense for the company, that would be great. However, what we need is more people owning the company. That way, more people, you know, if you're laying off people and people aren't working, they would still have an income from the company which they worked. It would be the profits. And that's going to require taking companies or having people being more active and more involved in government policies saying, hey, businesses cannot be owned by the 1%. Businesses need to be owned by the 99%, that way the productivity from increased automation, the rewards of that go to all people, and we can all have a sustained income in the years and months and years ahead. But it's an interesting story. We've talked about it a number of different ways. We have had other guests on talking about that, and it's something that we're going to, just like climate change and the need for action, we're going to have to be proactive with this, people. Okay, I'll tell you what, let's go to a commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to introduce you to a really cool guy, a man whom I greatly respect. He's up to date with environmental issues, and he walks the talk. He's absolutely remarkable. It's Ed Fallon, and you'll be talking to him here on the Tim Danahy Show. We'll be right back.
Far up in the azure sky, but the only mansions I've ever known were not for you and I.
Teddy Roosevelt said, of all forms of tyranny, the least attractive and the most vulgar is the tyranny of mere wealth. This is why antitrust law and competition is essential to America's economic health. This is why the Organization for Competitive Markets works to reclaim competition for farmers, ranchers, and rural communities across America. We believe our duty is to advocate a just role for government in the agricultural economy, an enforcer of rules necessary for markets that are fair, honest, and accessible. The Organization for Competitive Markets. Learn more at competitivemarkets.com.
I have heard of beautiful stories and of times that are going to be, but the only times that I've ever known are bad for you and me.
You preserve a nation one community at a time, with shared knowledge and an informed electorate, with many voices speaking with civility and integrity. And we will preserve our nation when we participate, we learn, we discuss, we vote. We are the Coffee Party USA. Join us today, coffeepartyusa.com.
I've heard of beautiful countries far off in the land of dead. But in the only countries I've ever known, the poor and hungry lack bread.
Welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at danahy.com, and we're a proud member of the Coffee Party USA Network. And one of my favorite and most impactful memories I've had in the last year was when I spent a day with the marchers participating in the Great March for Climate Awareness, although I don't think I'm given the correct name, but to raise awareness, climate action. Thank you, Ed. And climate action. And these marchers were hiking from the Pacific Ocean, Los Angeles, to Washington, D.C., to raise awareness across America about the real dangers of climate change. And I only hooked up with these people for one day in rural western Nebraska. But the quality and the sincerity of them stay with me to this day. And the organizer of the march is an equally remarkable person, a great man, really, who literally walks his talk. And he's a guy that really impressed me, but it's been a devil of a time trying to hook up with you. His name is Ed Fallon. And Ed, welcome to the Tim Danahy Show.
Good to be here.
Well, Ed, you know, I read your newsletters. I hear what's going on, and it's incredible how much you're volunteering and working towards numerous environmental causes and your radio show. And it seems like it's bearing fruit, Ed. I mean, awareness of climate change as a sincere danger seems to be increasing. Am I correct?
Well, yeah, there's no doubt about it. People, it's hard. You know, we're kind of, as a species, I think we're very conservative. We don't like things to change. We don't want to believe they're changing sometimes. And, you know, you can look at this throughout history. You know, Native Americans didn't realize that there was going to be this huge influx of Europeans to totally change their way of life. You know, My family, the Irish, did not realize that the potato famine was going to get to the point that it did. You know, we're inclined to believe that the worst will happen, even when the facts demonstrate otherwise. And I think more and more people are waking up to the reality that, yeah, the scientific fact on climate change is for real, and the front edge of it is happening now, and the eventual impacts are going to be huge.
Well, not only is awareness happening, Ed, but it seems that the attitudes are changing. Whereas, and you're going to have to forgive me on this one, Ed, whereas you may have been an outlier 2 years ago. You know what I mean? For saying, oh, he's one of those climate change crazies or something. Now people are realizing you've been called crazy before. I can tell, Ed. Now people are...
One of my most cherished
nicknames. Yeah, exactly. Crazy Ed Fallon. But now people are saying, oh my goodness, you know, maybe Ed was right. You know, I think that there seems to be, despite a concerted effort to discredit climate science, people are starting to take this seriously. Do you think it might be they're starting to see that for themselves it's warm in their backyard?
I think we've got two tipping points that are running parallel. And one is the tipping point of the impact on this planet from our human activity, from our burning of fossil fuels since the industrial age. And those impacts are starting to be felt and becoming more and more obvious. And the other set of impacts, the other tipping point, I should say, is human awareness of the problem is growing. Now, the big question is, who's going to get there first? Are we going to have such severe, you know, climate change before we can really do anything to adapt and mitigate the damage? Or is America and the world going to wake up in time to make the changes needed? You know, I've been arguing we need a World War II style, you know, approach to this, where suddenly we got it and we all got involved. Every man, woman, child. My dad got involved. My dad would go down to the railroad tracks in the South Bronx, and he would collect cigarette boxes and you pull that little piece of tin out of it, that little tin foil in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever been a smoker, tin. I haven't been.
Right.
But I have looked at those boxes. They have a piece of tin foil in there. And that would be used to help the scrap metal drive. My dad did that as a 9 or 10-year-old. And everybody got involved. And as a country, we retooled an entire economy to be able to prevent Hitler from taking over the world. So, you know, we did. There is a precedent. America can absolutely, quickly, thoroughly redirect the economy if anyone that wants to. And that's what we need now. We need that kind of a vast, you know, across the country, up and down mobilization. We don't need, you know, I get really frustrated when I hear presidential candidates saying, well, by 2050, we can do this. You know, we don't have the 2050. We have now, as far as we know, we have now, and we need to start acting like the tidal wave of climate change, the mother of all transitions is going to be on us any minute now, and we need to be acting accordingly.
Well, isn't there an irony or a sadness, really, I guess, Ed, that the fact is that if we were to really mobilize, as you're saying, this is a world war on climate change. If we were to mobilize in the same way we did for World War II, one would think that it would have tremendous economic impacts, positive, and also be a good geopolitical statement, too, especially with interest rates being near zero, correct?
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, and the problem with World War II, of course, is we totally retooled the civilian economy into a military one to fight and win a war against a dictator who knows where he would stop. And then we never got off the military economy. We're still in a war economy in some way. But that's shifting. I mean, we're seeing tremendous investment in solar and wind and energy efficiency and biodiesel. And we're just scratching the surface of that. If we were to decide as a nation that we're going to move whole hog in that direction and we're going to back off fossil fuels, you know, I'm not saying it can happen tomorrow, but it can happen really fast. And, yeah, the economic benefit of that investment is huge. I mean, in Iowa, I don't know what it's like in Colorado or other states where you have an audience, but in Iowa, we have nearly 30% of our electricity is now from wind. And it's going to go up to 40% when the next round of turbines goes in.
Well, we look Ed, we look at this with, you know, kind of like say, wow, 30-40%. But the truth of the matter is, even though places like Iowa and Colorado and Texas, all these places are starting to get it, places like Denmark got it. I saw in the news, I think it was a week ago, that Denmark now produces 106% of its electricity through windmills. And so they are electrically self-sufficient, and they're exporting electricity. Germany, I mean, we're not talking about sun-drenched beaches in Germany. Germany is a cloudy country, and they're generating more than the United States. It's what factors are at play that keep us from being aligned with a more enlightened world?
Well, it's, again, it's a really, really well-financed denier industry. Funded by some of the oil pipes that don't want us to change. I mean, they want to continue to milk this profit machine for every penny they can get. And, you know, damn the torpedoes, and who cares about what the future looks like for the rest of us. It's just it's unbridled greed. But, you know, even within the energy industry, you're seeing some changes. I mean, Mid-American Energy, which is out of Nebraska, which services in a big chunk of Iowa, too, that's part of Warren Buffett's empire. And, you know, he sees the value of wind. And it's one reason we have so much wind in Iowa is Buffett has seen to invest in that, you know. You see the sense of investing in that. But then you've got folks like the guy who wants to build a pipeline to Iowa. You know, all he can see is oil. That's all he can see. And, you know, so with this vast fortune, he's, you know, part of the industry that's pushing this myth on people that we need to continue to expand our fossil infrastructure. And we don't, in fact, you know, not only do we not need to, but it's counterproductive. If we do it, if we build it. You know, we have an expression in Iowa, because we have the Field of Dreams here up in the northeast part of the state. If you build it, they will come. Well, The same with the pipeline. If you build it, we'll fill it with oil.
Right.
And it'll slow down that investment we need in wind and solar and other areas.
Well, it's interesting, Ed, that you see that divestment, the opposite of investment, divestment, where people are pulling their money out. Divestment seems to be increasing worldwide. And I thought the most striking statement was done by Norway. Norway is the world's largest sovereign fund due to oil. And they have now come out and said they're going to start divesting in carbon-based industries. And while it's ironic, it's wonderful, isn't it? It's a widespread movement.
Yeah, it is. It's getting broader, and it's not coming a minute too soon. We really need to see it move forward at a great pace.
Have you noticed any increased conversation now with the Pope's encyclical talking about climate change? I mean, he is the spiritual leader for, I'm tempted to say, a billion people. And now what's funny, it's not funny, it's wonderful, Ed, I think you would agree, that the nuns have now become investment activists and apparently are driving a lot of carbon-based industries crazy.
Yes, nuns on the bus. Hopefully that bus is fueled by biodiesel. But the Pope's encyclical is huge, huge. And here locally in the Des Moines diocese, the Bishop Pace came out with a very strong statement that appeared as an opinion piece in the Des Moines Register. That was very emphatically just repeating the points and the highlights on climate that you saw in the Pope's encyclical. It's not just that with the Pope, but the Pope's stand on this is not just affecting Catholics. He's recognized as an important voice, even among people who aren't Catholic. So that's significant. You know, I'm a big believer that anybody, no matter how small or large your voice is, you need to say what's on your mind, whether you say it to your neighbor, a family member, in a letter to the editor, calling into a talk show for that matter. But honestly, when you've got a guy like that who is in charge of a huge denomination, that's big news. That's big news.
Well,
and I hope more and more people of his stature, well, there's not too many people that, that really are of that stature globally, but I think more and more people who have big audiences should also be speaking as locally as possible, because we're at the point now where we've got to take action very, very quickly.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ed, let's break for a quick commercial, and then when we come back, even though there's some good news developing, I do want to get a handle kind of on the scientific quantifiers for climate change, if we could. We're talking with Ed Fallon, and it's a special treat. He's with the Fallon Forum. He's just involved with a number of issues. Just an incredible and remarkable man. I'm proud to have him on the show. He's on multiple stations throughout Iowa. He's got podcasts. He's volunteering 50, 60 hours a week. Nothing short of remarkable. Every town, every community, every block needs a man like Ed Fallon, and we're glad to have him here on the Tim Danahy Show. We'll be right back. You hear the music we're playing here on the Tim Danahy Show? We like to feature socially aware music by independent artists across the country. So if you have music or you know a musician who would like us to feature their songs, contact us through Danahy.com. Send us an MP3 version or a link, a little bit about you and permission to use it on the show. And we'll listen. We'll try to feature it and we'll post your link for everyone to see. Music is a part of the Tim Danahy Show community. We'd love for you to be that part here at Danahy.com.
I have heard of beautiful garments to be worn by the fighters of sin.
Danahy.com. AmericanHistory.com's American History Minute, a one-minute story about little-known events. And here's today's story. In 1960, James Lawson came to Nashville to teach black students about nonviolence. They were planning sit-ins at segregated lunch counters. The trainers insisted the students must always dress well, talk calmly, be polite, and remain patient. They drilled how not to respond to violence by yelling epithets at each other and pushing each other to the floor, all in anticipation of what lay ahead. Then they politely sat at lunch counters to be served. Store owners were bewildered and closed the counters early. But the students returned. This time, the segregationists were violent. A march on Nashville Town Hall ensued, and Diane Nash asked Mayor West, "Is it wrong to discriminate against a person solely on the basis of his race?" The mayor hemmed and hawed. She asked again, "Then, Mayor, do you recommend the lunch counters be desegregated?" He paused and said yes. The crowd erupted and the headlines blared, "Mayor says to integrate counters." Within weeks, the protest spread to 78 cities with 70,000 participants. A movement was born, all due to the courage of a few nonviolent students and a single courageous politician. This story has been provided by The Tim Danahy Show. Please like us on Facebook at Tim Danahy Show. And follow us on Twitter at hashtag Tim Danahy Show. And thank you for listening at Danahy.com.
The only garments I've ever known in winter were terribly thin.
Why do you send your food money to faraway factory farms and industrial ranchers distributing through megastores headquartered in other cities, other states? It doesn't make sense. You can keep your dollars local. Help your local farmer, your local rancher, your local retailer, your neighbors. And it comes back. Your commitment to the local food shift means more money stays in the community and is reinvested here. Reinvested in you. It's easy and it's smart. Go to localfoodshift.com. Learn how to buy local and watch it grow here. Localfoodshift.com.
Beautiful banquets far off in the by and by. But the only banquet
Welcome back to the Tim Danahy Show here at Danahy.com, and we're so proud to be talking with Ed Fallon, who is he's with the Fallon Forum. You can listen to him on KDLF 1260 in Des Moines, KHOI 89.1 FM in Ames, Iowa, and that's actually where I'm broadcasting today. KPVL 89.1 FM, Postville, Iowa. You can catch his podcasts, and just an intelligent, enlightened, wonderful man, and I think that you would be well served. And Ed, if we can ever arrange it, you know, maybe what we should do is put your link up on my page or something. At least that way, a few more people can see what you're all about.
That would be great.
Yeah, sure. We're gonna have to do that, and I will make the arrangements for that. We're talking about climate change, and Ed, we're talking about attitudes changing. We're talking about mobilizing in a World War II type of mentality where we've got to tackle this in a hurry. While the awareness has been going on, are we making progress in this regard?
Well, it's hard to know. It seems to me we are. It's one of those things where change happens incrementally. And then at some point there's enough momentum that boom, it just goes, you know? And I feel we're getting close to that point where, boom, we're just going to go. But, you know, for that reason, every little thing we do matters. We have to keep pushing, keep working as hard as we can to get more people part of the solution. You know, and the big issue here in Iowa is, and you've probably heard about this since you're in one of the counties that the proposed Bakken oil pipeline will go through. That is a pipeline that would be over 1,000 miles long, and a very wealthy Texan, one of the richest guys in America, a guy named Kelsey Warren, wants to build this pipeline from the Bakken oil field in northern North Dakota. Wants to cut up through South Dakota, then diagonally through Iowa, and then down through Illinois, connecting with a pipeline that would bring it down to refineries in Texas. In other words, even though this is being billed as, helping to provide fuel for America, it's heading to refineries in a port. we aren't that dumb. We can figure out that this is primarily going to be for export. That's what some of the huge markets are overseas. So the other thing is, Keystone is probably not going to happen. I mean, we got to keep pushing on that. But the Keystone pipeline has become a national symbol of the movement to stop the expansion of the fossil fuel infrastructure. And Keystone, of course, was targeted to tap into Alberta tar sands oil. And by the way, maybe you saw this, Tim, big spill in Alberta, big oil spill, one of the biggest ever on the North American continent just this week.
I did not. How does it compare to unfortunately in America always say is how many football stadiums would it fill? But I mean, really we're talking, there's oil spills going on all the time. There's one in Alabama. There's Arkansas. There's the river in Michigan. It doesn't get the coverage. And so this one that occurred up in Alberta, I have not seen it in the news. Can you tell me more about it?
I just saw it today, and I haven't had a chance to read it thoroughly. It just came into my news feed today. But it's been described as one of the biggest ever.
Okay.
But the bottom line is, I mean, Keystone was intending to, pump, to transport that oil from, and that's a vast reserve. The tar sands field. Huge. Bakken in North Dakota, much smaller. I mean, still a lot of oil, but smaller, much smaller in comparison. But here's what's going to happen. And you can't, people in the industry will not deny this. When you ask them point blank, once you're done draining the Bakken, would the pipeline be in North Dakota, northern North Dakota, close to the Canadian border? Is it possible that pipeline would be extended to Canada and thus transport tar sands oil through North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois? And they won't say no. Which, in other words, that means yes. And again, you look at it, they're so darn close to the border by the time they're done building them. So we're fighting this with everything we have. We're throwing everything we have in Iowa at them. When I say we, I don't just mean environmentalists and climate change activists. But there's a very, very strong property rights movement here in Iowa. In fact, when an Iowa poll was conducted earlier this year, they found that 74% of Iowans were against condemning farmland for a pipeline, for an oil pipeline. 74%. One out of, three out of every four Iowans don't believe government should condemn property for a pipeline. And yet this company is pushing hard to get the authority to do that. Now, I walked across the country last year, as you mentioned, but this year, in March and April, I walked 400 miles across Iowa following the path of that pipeline and talking with landowners and farmers and others along the way. And, there were some people who were okay with the pipeline. They bought the argument that, we need the oil. But the vast majority did not like it. And even some people who had signed an easement allowing the company to, take their land for some compensation, even those people didn't like it. But there's a lot of people who are so strongly against it. And some of them don't get climate change. That's not their issue. They don't really track that. What they get is, how dare a big corporation use the power of government to come in and take my land against my will? Some of these folks are very strong, vocal libertarians. They're individualists. They're rural, rugged Americans who just don't want government or big business messing with them. And so it's a very interesting coalition that's formed. In fact, Tim, this coalition is so interesting. I ran for governor in 2006 as a Democrat. A gentleman named Doug Gross ran for governor in 2002 as a Republican. I don't think Doug Gross and I have ever been on the same page of an issue before. We're both on the same side of this one. So that's a kind of interesting coalition that's formed around this. And I think you see that forming in other states around similar issues, around pipelines and fracking as well. People understand, so some understand that as an environmental assault, as an assault on the planet through the carbon and methane emissions, and others come at it from the point of view is this is just not the role that government should be playing. And my, you know, my right to my property has a higher, is of higher importance than some company from Texas that wants to run a pipeline through it with all the risks to come with a hot oil pipeline 40 inches in diameter running through my property. So, you know, that's kind of the, that's the new, this Bakken, I think, is the new keystone. Again, there are places in the country where they want to expand pipelines. And those should be stopped, and there are great people fighting to stop them in Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and other states. But here in Iowa, and North Dakota, South Dakota, Illinois, we have a chance to stop a new pipeline from being built, and we're doing everything we can to see that that happens.
Well, Ed, people can find out more on your website. What is your website?
It's Fallon Forum. That's F as in Frank, A-L-L-O-N, as in Nancy, Fallon Forum. At gmail.com is my email, and the website is fallonforum.com. And there's a tab on that website that talks about my pipeline walk, and I posted a daily blog. Each day of the walk, I would interview farmers. I had some amazing conversations. I met some incredible people and shared some stories that were just heartwarming, some of them, and others were heart-wrenching. And I also talked about the experience of walking in temperatures in the single digits with 30-mile-an-hour winds coming at you. Those kinds of experiences, walking in the rain, driving rain. So it's kind of broad. It's a mixed travelogue, but also a lot of it is sharing stories of people along the way. But people who are concerned about a pipeline.
But that's the greatness of what you do, Ed. And you take an issue, you personalize it, you make it accessible, understandable, and non-threatening, and understandable for all people. And Ed, right now, you're doing what many in the media, the progressive media, the liberal media, are trying to do, and you're trying to raise some funds also, because you and me and great radio people like Egberto Willis down in Houston and Bobby Rodriguez in Atlanta. I mean, there's a whole bunch of us out there that are trying to say, hey, we need to stay alive. And I don't know about you, Ed, but I have not received a check from the Koch brothers or Walmart ever. Would you be on that list too?
I'd like to tell you they sent one, and I sent it back, but I have not received one.
No, but anyway, this is a time for your fundraiser. I am going to contribute to Ed, and I'll get my check out probably this weekend whenever I return to Colorado. But we have to support progressive media. We have to support people like Ed Fallon, who walks and talks and teaches and entertains and interests and is just such an important community resource. And to think he's volunteering all of this. I mean, Ed, you could be going out and working somewhere, but this country needs people like you to do what you're doing to fight for us. And it's not free, and we cannot take it for granted.
No, thank you. It's a challenge to keep going sometimes. But, you look at the problem, and you meet the people who are most immediately affected by it. And you look at the long haul, and you realize, hey, over time, we do win. I mean, over time, truth always comes up. And what did Gandhi say about tyrants? For a while, tyrants may seem invincible, but over time they fall because it's the universe out of balance. And a lot of what we're working on here is trying to bring balance back to our lives, our communities, our planet. And so we keep pushing because we have to.
And you're one of the finest people and finest spokesmen for that pushing, Ed. I want to congratulate for you and what you've accomplished, and I want to thank you for coming on the show. And Ed, before I let you go, I have to get you to publicly say, "Hey Tim, I'd be glad to come on your show lots more times."
take Sam. I would be glad to come on your show lots of times, providing you define my last name.
we can do that. So, Ed, I'm still hoping to track you down while I'm here in Iowa in the next few days, but darn it if you aren't so busy. But Ed Fallon, FallonForum.com, thanks so much for being on the Tim Danahy Show.
Thank you, Tim. Good luck.
It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor.
And I'm tired of hearing of these beautiful things in the land beyond the grave. And the only thing I know for sure is that here I am.
The Tim Danahy Show would like to thank Aaron Taylor of SRC Labs for production management and outreach strategies, and Presonus, a leading designer and manufacturer of audio recording software, hardware, and related accessories available at Guitar Center, for Edward Danahy for post-production assistance, and for all the stations and affiliates who carry the Tim Danahy Show, and lastly, to Theodore, the studio bull terrier, for his quiet companionship. We get a lot of emails asking about this song. It's A Tramp's Thought by Tom Nielsen, and hope you enjoy it.
Far off in the land of the blessed, but in the only cities I've ever known, the weary get no rest. I have heard of beautiful mansions far up in the azure sky, but the only mansions I've ever known were not for you and I. I have heard of beautiful stories and of times that are going to be, but the only times that I've ever I've heard of beautiful countries far off in the land of the dead, but in the only countries I've ever known, the poor and hungry lack bread. I know for sure is here.